as he was talking about the deferred money thing and like how the Dodgers are doing that to stay competitive right now, it just kind of hit me like, why don't the Dolans ever consider doing deals that way? Because like, I understand maybe early on when they own the team, well, they figure they're going to own the team for a while, right? So that's just money that you have to pay.
Yeah.
But now that we know we're towards the tail end of their ownership,
you're going to write checks that Blitzer has to cash.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you do, it's the same thing that like the Celtics did. Like the Celtics owner last year, he paid all these guys and was like, yeah, we're going to be in the tax. And he's like, but I'm selling the team anyway, so what do I care?
I'll go on top.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, if you're Paul Dolan and then all you hear is people criticize how cheap you are, you don't spend enough money, you don't go for it. Why not, understanding that you might only own the team for like another like 2 to 3 years anyway? Well, hey, let's go sign a couple guys. I'm not even saying you got to do like the mega, like, I'm not saying like go get Juan Soto or anything, but like sign a couple of guys, do some deals that are like deferred money. And then it's the next person's thing to worry about. And in the meantime, like, you maybe get to go out a hero if you actually bring a title to Cleveland.
It would be really funny if he spent like $105 million on total payroll and then had like a $50 million a year deal that was just deferred that doesn't start until 2035. And Butcher's like, so what about that deal? Oh, it didn't start until 2035.
You got time.
Did that intentionally. It's okay. Yeah, what does go along with this? I don't know.
I'm not saying it's a foolproof plan. It's the way that this world kind of works now. Like, it's the same thing. The Bucks just did it, right? Like, they just deferred all this money in Damian Lillard's deal by waiving him. And they're like, yeah, we'll pay it later. And I don't know that they're planning on selling the team.
Well, it's becoming more and more a thing. I mean, today is Bobby Bonilla Day, one of the most famous deferred payment stories of all time. And Adam Wainwright starts his today.
When does that expire? 40-something?
Hey, we got a long time. And I really wanted to avoid bringing up Bobby Bonilla Day at any point in this show, because everyone does it at some point.
By the way, I swear on my life I did not bring this up just to like sort of shoehorn in Bobby Bonilla somehow.
I believe
it just came up because he was talking about deferred money.
Well, and Shohei's obviously the most famous of the cases now.
Sure.
And there's just so much money. I mean, it's a $700 million deal, and there's so much of it that's deferred, and the idea behind that with Shohei was simple. I mean, okay, for years, Tom Brady, for instance, would take so much less than anybody else should have, and people always wondered, is he getting a part of the Patriots stake under the table? Like, what's going on here? But his thought process was, well, it's a capped league, and so I gotta take as little as I can to help out the team. Shohei's thought process is, in the deferred money standpoint, very similar. He's still getting as much money as possible, but the part that's similar is that he's like, oh, well, it opens up a lot more money that you can spend right now. And I do think it's not a bad point that you bring up. I mean, more so than the Dolan side of it, but like the Blitzer or Cleveland owner eventually should be considering something like deferred payments if you have a window and a team that is ready to win right now.
And we all thought that this team was it. Like, they made the ALCS last year. This would have been the perfect time.
Right, like if they had initially given J-Ram the discounted deal and said, Lindor, you're on a payment plan, essentially, you could have easily had both of them here and then just not paid any of that for another 15 years as if Lindor's on layaway.
And you think about it, like, Lindor got what, like $300 million? Like, that deal now seems like cheap compared to what like guys like the new big stars that are getting deals are getting. Like that's like what he's making right now is like pennies to like Juan Soto's deal.
Yeah, 15 years from now it'll seem like an actual discount. It'll seem like the discount that J-Ram just took. Now, you still do have to pay that money. Like,
it's not
Monopoly money. And so for the Dolans, they probably are like, well, we don't ever want to pay that money anyway. But you're not wrong. It would have been an easy way to just have a lot of good graces and get in a lot of people's good spirits and actually open up the pocketbooks a little bit here. Like, I like that Jason went after him because I've been going after the Dolans for years in that department. My answer's always been simple, and I've talked to people at the Guardians about this. I don't complain about the Dolans because I think the Dolans are going to change. My problem I have with the Dolans is they're not Mark Cuban. You know, my problem with the Dolans is that they're not one of these billionaires that's going to come in here and be able to write as many blank checks as they possibly can and know that when they sell, the valuation will be 10, 15, 20x what they bought into, and that's where the real profits come into. But I want the billionaire that is going to look at this like he bought a fancy piece of art or he bought a private island and just wants to use it as a vehicle to brag to his friends with. That's what I want.
That's 100% how I treat ownership. Like, if I was rich enough to be an owner, it wouldn't be this thing for me that's like, well, hey, how can I do I want to make some money off of it? Of course. But like, my main goal would just be winning as many championships as possible and fielding the best team so that I could smear it in the faces of like my other owner friends who are also all rich and are coming to hang out on my yacht for burgers.
You're not going to lose money. We're in 100 years, we're yet to see a team sell for less money than what was initially bought for.
And that's always the key point. That is always the key point, is like, when these owners buy these teams, the money they, no matter how much money they spend in the in between while they own it, the money you get back at the end when you sell it is like quadrupled. Like it's
always
it's,
goes up.
Like
in a
Dan
big
Gilbert's
time
selling
way.
What 10 to 15% of the Cavs right now just from that sale, mm-hmm. he's gonna make like. I don't know the exact.
It'll,
like,
it'll cover
estimates.
His initial buy-in
I was gonna
price.
Say, but I think the, I was gonna say, like, I'm assuming it's gonna be like at least what he paid to buy the team. Like that's mm-hmm. that, like that's absurd. That's absurd. And now Dan Gilbert, obviously, is a different situation. He's a billionaire who is willing to
well,
spend.
But Dan's
and
great.
He's shown that
Dan would be an awesome Guardians owner in many ways. He's worth $35 billion. He'll spend money. He doesn't necessarily care about if he loses or nets. And by the way, they do net. Don't let him fool you. But if he loses or nets $50 million in any given season, he'll be fine.
Can you imagine the arc for Dan Gilbert if like his time here in Cleveland as an owner went from he buys the Cavs, gets LeBron, then loses LeBron, Comic Sans letter that everyone mm-hmm. hates him for.
Yeah.
LeBron comes back, wins a title, and everyone's like, kumbaya, but we still don't really know, like, do we like Dan Gilbert? Do we not like Dan Gilbert? Then he, that now he's building this team right now where he's going into the tax and doing all these different things. And I think of all the owners in town, like, he's perfected the balance of, I will spend money on the right players, and now I'm willing to be patient and employ the right people to like build an actual team for me. So he's balanced it all perfectly. And then if he were to buy the Guardians on top of it and then turn them into a title town, like the arc from villain, we hate you, you don't belong here because you ran LeBron out of town and you were too cheap, to all of a sudden him being like this mm-hmm. this icon who wins championships with both the Cavs and the Guardians would be absurd. That would
I mean,
be awesome.
It sounds unreal, but I would have taken Haslam just the same way as I would have taken Gilbert too. Haslam's worth $11 billion. He uses these things as more of a braggadocious thing than anything. Yeah. Hence Brownstown and the podcast that comes with it. Like, he loves this stuff and he loves bragging to his friends about it. But he also understands that's why he's buying. That's why he did everything with the Bucks. He's going to own the Bucks one day 100% outright. That owner's cash poor and they don't have the money to pay all these different players. That's why he was given the stake that he was given. Like no, it's gonna happen. Well, it's headed down the tracks. But I would have taken either one of them.
Yeah, but that's why when I talk about the three owners, I think like Dan Gilbert's balanced, figured out everything. He's figured out how to like build a team, be patient, employ the right people, and spend the money. Haslam has the money part down. We know he's willing to spend what he needs to spend to try to win. That's not a problem. He just has to figure out the football side of it. And then on the flip side, the Guardians have mastered the like player development to a degree and like operating in the margins and finding ways to be competitive, but they just don't have the money to back it to actually like take that next step. So it's kind of funny that like you have an example of like all three things being true in this very town, and the Cavs probably feel the closest to a championship of any of the teams in town.
It's hard to get like the perfect person in that regard. It just is. Let me ask you for tonight, where's your interest in this Guardians game? I feel like so many fans are at such a low point with this team. Cubs have been playing really good baseball. It's a nationally televised game. Four of the next five are on national TV. So you gotta, I mean, these are the moments that, I mean, the Guardians have been playing such bad baseball. It feels like you never want this opportunity right now. But anytime you're on national TV is always a big time deal. But it feels like the Guardians had people's attention this last weekend. People were wanting them to prove them wrong. And they failed at it. And I don't know how long of a leash they have with people's eyeballs and the attention that they would want based off of what we saw over the previous week of play.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be way more interested if they had actually called up somebody of significance that we've been talking about for like 2 weeks now.
Well, so is that
now?
What it is? Like, are we waiting? If they call up Kafis, if they call up DeWater, you know me. I watch every one of these games. It doesn't matter anyway. Like, sports is just what I do at night. So it doesn't, I mean, I'll watch cornhole on TV if it's the only thing going and it's 8 o'clock at night. Who cares, right? So like, I just love sports. Yeah. That's what I'm about. You're very similar too.
Bets on FanDuel on cornhole.
Not on cornhole. I got caught watching cornhole the other day, and it was a mixed doubles event, a mixed college doubles cornhole event. And my wife was like, she was mocking like the one. My wife's like very sweet and very nice, but she just this one girl that was playing just did not have it. And my wife, she just glances over. She's like, I could make these shots. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, I know. I think that too.
You guys get really into it. That's great.
It's absurd. It's why is cornhole on? It's on all the time these days. I have no idea why.
It's big. I don't know. It's big.
But I'll watch. That's just how much I love sports. I'll watch basically anything that's sports on television. And minus the WNBA, of course. We're not watching that. I like the game above the rim. And some of this is very sloppy right now.
Very
sloppy right now.
In terms of my interest, though, like, I think that this week, I do think there's a level of, like, once one of these prospects get up, like, your interest is back on it. Just because you want to watch at least that guy.
But we're in that set in between
those,
the problem.
Right now, I think this is the last week, like, without something like that happening, that you are sort of hyper-focused on the Guardians. Because this is kind of a... I feel like this is, like, a make-it-or-break-it week. I know we could say that about the last, like, 3 weeks.
But I felt like last week was make-it-or-break-it. And then they got swept.
If you show a pulse against these next three teams, the Cubs, the Tigers, and the Astros, all of whom are leading their respective divisions... then I think suddenly people are like, okay, well, maybe there's something there. And if they do call these guys up, like, maybe we have a fighting chance. But if you flop and flounder in this next week, then I think people then will 100% be checked out on this team until, again, something like that happens, like Chase Delauder gets caught up and then you have a reason to watch again.
I feel like last week was that week. Last week was that week of, like, all right, we're hanging on by a thread. We are in for these games. We're going to make sure that this offense actually does something. And then they didn't show a pulse. They laid down and died.
This is the problem with the Guardians. I talked about this on Saturday. Or, like, they always do this where they give you, like, two games where they can't score. And then all of a sudden they give you like a 10-run game where they like blow a team out and you're like, you're sucked right back in. Like, well, hey, if Gabe Arias can do this more regularly, I know he's hurt, I'm just saying, like, as an example, then we're going to be okay. And so it would be so Cleveland Guardians to last week give you what they gave you in one of their last 36 innings,
Spencer.
And that would be so Cleveland Guardians, though, to like be as bad as they were last week against bad teams.
They went
like
9-16 in June. I watched them be the worst offense in baseball for the month of June.
And then for them to start July with like a sweep of the Cubs. Wouldn't that be the most Guardians thing ever?
It was a different month.
But wouldn't that be the most Guardians thing ever if they start the month like sweeping the Cubs and then it's like, yeah, we know we were bad a week ago, but we swept the Cubs.
It would be.
And then you got Stephen Vogt after the game like, hey, we're right in the thick of this thing. We're playing some of our best baseball, like he tends to say.
Yeah, they have one good game and all of a sudden Vogt would be like, this is the offense I told you guys could happen. 216-474-0092. What's your interest in tonight's Guardians game, Matt? And Spencer's perfected something. I'm ready to have my mind blown here. We'll do it next. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.